Welcome to Photography Insights, your one-stop guide to interviews with people in the photography industry. Just wanted to say thank you all for listening and supporting the show, but please do keep the Facebook and iTunes reviews coming in. For episode 74, we bring you the man behind Japan Camera Hunter. Yes, it's Bellamy Hunt. And Bellamy is at the forefront for those in search of their dream cameras. In fact, his business works around the idea of sourcing cameras in high-end conditions. But this isn't all what Bellamy is known for. Of course, he even has his own film called the JCH Street Pan. And he's been around the analogue photography scene a long time as a blogger too, with reviews and articles and news for current events. In fact, you might know him from his writing skills and honesty, and something he's criticised for quite frequently. And in this episode, we talk about the industry of sourcing cameras, Japanese customs, trends and travelling, and of course, there's a hint of a few rare cameras you might be interested in. And for the random questions, we discuss horse riding and the UK. So as usual, check out the website flogger.co.uk for links and sign up for the newsletter, and that way you're guaranteed to get all the latest news, work and podcast episodes in a weekly email. But for now, let's roll the music and await our host, Andrew Wormsley. And welcome to the show, Mr. Bellamy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you, mate. Thanks for coming on. I know there's Christmas and business being involved for you, so yeah. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No, that's cool. So obviously you're famous probably as a blogger and obviously as the service you provide to your clients.
Yeah, I guess it's better than being famous for some things, but
Definitely. Well, you are famous for your blogging, obviously, because you speak your mind, you take a lot of crap.
Yeah. I'm usually on the receiving end of a fair bit, so you know.
Yeah,
but it goes with the territory. I never set out to be popular, but if you know, if you become in some way popular, that's what happens. So that's how you have to take it.
Yeah. I think some of it is probably because of where you are in Japan. I think you're so far away from everyone else. Maybe there's like a little niche there so you can just have a go at you.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, I've had some stuff. I've even had some people mistaking me for Japanese, and, you know, which is always fun. You know, they tell me how terrible my English is and have a good little laugh at that one. Or they compliment me on how good my English is. It's like, well, thanks.
Wow.
My teacher in high school probably wouldn't agree with you on that one, but
no, that's cool. So obviously you run your service, the Japan Camera Hunter. Do you want to give a little introduction for those who don't understand what it is?
So Japan Camera Hunter is a site which I set up nearly 10 years ago now. And it's, I mean, I see it as a couple of things. It's a resource for people to learn about film photography and cameras and technique and learn about photographers and see other people's work. But it's also a vehicle to drive sales to me for what I do, which is I source and sell cameras, classic cameras, film cameras and lenses. And I also have my own products such as JCH Street Pan film and film cases and soft releases. So the website is a resource, but it is a vehicle to get people to sort of support my business, which is why I don't have ads on the site. I don't have any ads on the site because I don't want that clutter, and I don't need the ad revenue because my site makes me money by selling cameras, selling film, finding cameras for people, that sort of thing. So that's it. It's a site to help you with film photography and then help you buy a film camera.
There you go. All done. Yeah, sorted. Now, that's really cool. So did you start the website and the trade when you moved to Japan, or did you start it back here?
No. I'd already been in Japan for a few years by the time I set up the business. And I'd initially worked as an English teacher, and then I managed to get a job working for a Japanese photographic supply company.
Okay.
Very old, very traditional Japanese company. And it was a what you could call an apprenticeship.
Right.
I mean, I started off, my initial job was sweeping the floors. You know, and then filling sandbags for studio lights and preparing tripods for sale and all of this sort of thing, and preparing lenses for sale. And then slowly, you know, you sort of move up the ladder and you gain more responsibility. And during the course of that job, I was sourcing classic cameras for certain clients back in the UK.
Okay.
Because they had a connection with this Japanese company. And I realized that, you know, I was good at it, but also I'd had the advantage of being given a formal introduction with this company to all of these suppliers and all of these traders. And so everybody knew who I was. It was like a back door. You know, and it came, it wasn't something I was given. I had to earn it. I had to work hard to get it. But once I, you know, realized this is what I want to do as my job, and I wasn't doing that as my full-time job within the company. And I actually asked the head of the company if I could do this on my own. And he gave me his blessing and said, yeah, sure. You know, so off I went. And yeah, gradually, I mean, a lot of work, a lot of hours. I built it up to what it is now. Which
that's
is
really cool.
I mean, I have staff, I have full-time employees.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a proper business, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome, mate. Yeah. So, was it like a niche thing to get into with all these suppliers? I mean, because of the Japanese culture, can anyone just do it, or are you trying to work?
Okay, so it's changed since I started, and there were already foreigner buyers back then, you know, 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
There was plenty of foreigners there, but generally they spoke Japanese, and generally they'd spent a long time building relationships.
Right.
And that's the important thing. Even now, you can come here, you can buy cameras and stuff, but you won't get the deals, you won't see the special stuff until you've come 10, 15, 20 times, you know the name of the guy in the store, he knows your name, and then doors start opening up for you, you know. And there's a lot of traders from, you know, the UK and all over the world who come here regularly, and they do have access. Not always in the same sort of access that I do, but then again, there's access to things that they have which I don't, you know, which, because those are relationships they've fostered with other traders or other sellers, or you know, and it can be quite cliquey as well. Nobody everybody's in competition with each other, so nobody really likes each other. Nobody's really going to give each other any information. Everybody's super cagey about what they bought, how much they spent, what they've seen.
Right.
You know. So nobody trusts each other at all. I mean, it has changed. There are people who are doing it now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of eBay traders who are just buying everything they can.
Yeah.
You know. That has made me change the nature of my business.
Okay.
So I focus a lot more now on consignment sales. I sell items for people.
Okay.
because that way I can ensure the quality that I want.
Right. So that's selling on behalf of someone, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So because you've got...
it's become harder to find the good stuff on the shelves, and I think people sort of don't really understand that. They think it's this endless gold mine.
Yeah.
And it's not always the case. As something becomes popular, everybody buys it with eBay.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I don't want to sell somebody a dud.
Yeah.
So I'd rather not source something if I can't source it to the quality I want.
Okay.
You know, and I get a lot of flack from people saying, oh, what's the point in you having a service if it's something you can't find? Well, because I don't want to sell you a piece of crap that's going to break after a month.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see that camera come back to me.
Yeah.
So, I have high standards.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's really good, mate. And when I spoke to Yuho, he was telling me how good the camera star is. And the fact they test everything, I was like, I've never heard of anyone doing anything like this.
So we test everything that we get through, you know. And if it's not acceptable, then it doesn't go out. And if at all possible, we'll have it serviced before we get it sent out.
Yeah.
You know, and I work with a couple of camera stores here to make sure that we can get the really good stuff and make sure it's serviced, and so that we can give a warranty on it.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure that people aren't just... I'm sick of these. I get a lot of stories of people from eBay.
Yeah.
Or people who want to buy something from me. They say, hey, I want to buy so-and-so camera. And then they go, oh, wow, that's quite expensive. I'll just get one from eBay. And then about a month or 2 months later, you get a mail from them again saying, hey, so I just got my refund from eBay. you know, can we revisit finding that camera?
Yeah,
man, you know, sure. I could have saved you a whole lot of hassle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously it doesn't always work out because of the nature of these items. Yeah. I could send something out and it might not work. But I always take care of people. If that happens, I won't leave them with a piece of crap. You know, I'm not going to ghost them.
No, so, that's really good. Because obviously, like we've said, you've taken so much criticism. I mean, I was looking at some of your YouTube comments and, you know, people are saying, all Bellamy does is sell something at a premium to someone. We can all do that. And it's like, well,
sure.
You could talk about anything. You could talk about milk.
Go on then. See how long you go.
Yeah.
You know, I've spent a long time learning how to do this.
Yeah.
And building the connections to be able to do this. Yeah. Yes, I do charge a premium.
Yeah.
But I I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to hide it. I'm very open about my prices, my costs, and my charges. But I will charge a premium because I will make sure I'll get you the best I can possibly get. I'm not going to sit here and claim that mine are the best in the world, which some people have said I like to do. Because I don't know. It's not possible to know that. But I would like to think that mine are up there with the best.
Yeah.
You know, and I will always try and make sure somebody comes away from it with a smile on their face.
Yeah.
So that's important to me.
Oh, that's cool. And I think
the reputation on it, you know.
So... Well, I don't think that can always come out. Like on a blog, it can't, because you don't get that the emotive side and how professional you are. And I think it was the same with you, Ho. I think if people realized how good, you know, if they wanted to buy in Europe, you're better off buying off a camera store, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you are looking for certain things, there's plenty of stores in Europe. Camera store are great because they've got a big selection of everything. If you're looking for more specialist stuff, there are specialist places. Yeah. But if you're going to go to a store or a proper trader, like someone like myself or the traders in Europe, you should expect to pay a premium for that. Don't base prices on eBay. Because it's not at all reflective of the market.
Yeah.
You don't have the first idea of what the condition would be. Whereas if you go, you know of a store that's been established 10, 20, even you know, longer years, they've built a reputation on making sure that people get the good stuff.
So
there's Bricks and Mortar Premium, man, but support Bricks and Mortar. Come on, support your local camera store. Or support your international camera store, but yeah, stop, you know, faceless corporations.
Yeah, it's something I'm trying to incorporate a bit more. I mean, luckily I've not bought film off Amazon in years now because of, you know, knowing Paul at Analog Wonderland. And
I found somebody on Amazon selling my film for $50 a roll. And I'm like, what? How? How are you even... How?
Can't be selling any, surely.
It can't be. I don't know what it... I think it must have been some scam or something to try and damage the selling reputation or something. I don't know. But I'm just... Wow, man. Amazon. I'm forced to use it in Japan, unfortunately, because I need Marmite.
Fair enough.
That's the only option.
Yeah. I see it all over now, that even in general world, people are trying to do anti-Amazon thinking. And
yeah,
it is tough because no one can match their service.
Of course, no one can match their service, but you have, and I know in certain situations that's tough.
Yeah.
But if you do have the opportunity, if you do have the ability to afford or the time to afford a camera store or a photography store, chain or independent, go and support them because they need your help, you know. Get the developing done locally if you can, you know. It's heartening because you see in some cities around the world there's more, you know, more development, more photography stores appearing, which is great, you know, but they need our support. They need people to be in there buying stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been a thing that's been changing for years, and if we can stop people going online and buying from these massive corporations, it's going to help everybody. But
sure. I mean, I tend to buy my film. My own film. I've got an endless supply. That's mine. I'm not going to run out of that anytime soon. But when I need other stuff, I tend to go, because there's not a lot of range available locally to me in Japan.
Okay.
So what I tend to do is I go online to suppliers in Hong Kong or in Europe.
Yeah.
To get film.
Wow, that's surprising.
That won't be from Amazon, of course. These are from, I guess, local or internationally trading businesses. So,
yeah. No, that's cool. I mean, one little instance is this publisher I've come across, Hoxton Mini Press.
Right.
Do fabulous work with photographers in London. They go back to the 40s all the way up to modern day. Some fabulous... Right. The intricate little design work on the covers, really well printed, and they put a little card inside saying thank you for not buying from Amazon, because you can buy the book from Amazon as well, so they must print two versions of the card.
It's
that nice little touch that they do.
I mean, I always find I found Amazon a bit shady when I said Marmite. I bought the Marmite on Amazon Japan, and the Marmite came from Australia via Thailand.
Right.
To Japan. And I'm like, how is anybody making any money on this? I mean, laws of economics, you know, like this, it just can't work. That's what is weird. Going on here? This is shady. You know, like, I could not do this. This, I would be bankrupt within a month.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine if someone told you can you just fly this to Japan for a couple of quid?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't figure it out. So, yeah. But I mean, I initially started my business on eBay. When I very, very first began, I was selling on eBay, and I could not bear the fees, which were astronomical.
Yeah.
And also the ridiculously biased return policy,
Oh, it's terrible.
which could leave you in real trouble. So I very quickly decided to make the website the place where I would sell stuff. And to do that, I had to get eyes on the website. And so the best way to do that was to turn it into a blog, to feature in your bag people's camera bags, and to featured photographers and camera geekery and all of these sort of posts and things, and try and get new film news. So running the blog became the way I got people to come and buy stuff from me, buy cameras, buy lenses, and it meant I could cut out using eBay and all of these sort of huge auction sites. I could stop using that,
That's good.
so I was selling direct, which was, which is where I wanted to be. I didn't want to be. I know that there's lots of other camera stores that sell on eBay and direct, but that I think skews the market because they have to add a huge percentage on top to sell on eBay. And it gives people unrealistic ideas of what prices are. It can damage the way the prices are. So.
Well, for me, it always used to be a way for us consumers to sell our spare stuff and things we didn't want. That's what it's always about.
But when you get charged 18% for selling a camera, it doesn't leave much room for building anything yourself,
No, definitely.
They're effectively taking everything that you make.
You see it all over in the business world. I used to do training courses through a site called Udemy.com. Fantastic resource. And then I learned that they charged 75% to their educators. So, yeah, so everyone started leaving.
Wow.
I know that's
That's
just, and of course they would, you'd get more featured if your course was $20.
Lord. It sounds like one of those shady record promoters. Kid for the deal of a lifetime, and oh God, yeah.
I learned some amazing stuff off there, which is really cool. But yeah, I don't tend to use it now. So talk to us about some of the cameras then. So maybe some of the really high-end special cameras you found that we might not even
So,
know exist.
well, I mean, some of them I'm not allowed to talk about.
Sure.
Some of the, I mean, during the course of this business, I've signed NDAs.
Okay.
A client confidentiality is really important to me,
Yeah, that's
which is
cool.
why I have a newsletter. I don't do email lists. I don't do any of that stuff.
Okay.
And I do that primarily because I don't want people to know, people to know other people's information. I mean, that, and I want people to have confidence in that. I can talk about some of the cameras that I found, some of the rare stuff I found. The 6mm Nikon lens,
Six mil.
the huge dustbin lid.
Jesus.
That was a pretty cool thing.
Never
Let's see
heard
what
of
else.
that.
Sean Flynn, Errol Flynn's son, the Leica M2 that he used in the Vietnam War. What else? Number six, Leica Elcan 66mm lens, which was made for the US military. I mean, these are really crazily expensive items, and these are usually sourced specifically for a client. This is not an everyday thing. So those are really high-end stuff. I found some things which I would consider super rare and super special to me, and nobody else really gives a crap about. There was another Nikon 6mm lens, which was a fisheye. Much smaller one, and that's super rare. That's really, really, really rare. There's like a hundred and something of them, and nobody really knows what it is. But to me, that was like, oh my God, I found it, And a Nikon Hermes enlarger lens, which only 8 or so or 11 or so are known to exist. Yeah, I mean, I've been at Compass Cameras by Jaeger LeCoultre, found 3 different versions. I found English, French, and German versions of those. Yeah, a lot of stuff. A lot of really cool stuff. I think, you know, there was a point where I was like, I must find something of everything, you know. So I found all of the Konica Hexars, every version, and all of the Contax 2s, every version, yeah. You know. And then I was like, oh, I want to build a pyramid of QL17 black paints. So I had like 15 of them in a pile. but yeah, I don't source that much of that sort of thing now.
Okay.
I mean, I still do source it, but people have become a lot more aware of social media and things like that. And they are immediately very much, no, don't, you know, you found this, but please don't tell anyone about it.
Okay.
It's cool. You know, I don't want people to know I've got it, because some of them are quite valuable and they can be something that people would steal.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrible.
So we do have to be aware of that. We try and obscure serial numbers and things like that. I mean, I think the most expensive, rarest stuff that I've found has almost exclusively been Nikon.
Okay.
As opposed to Leica.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not to say I haven't found some crazy rare Leica stuff, but
yeah.
There was a very, very, very rare Zeiss lens and a Fujinon lens as well. Fujinon 1.2 Leica mount.
Wow.
50mm, which it's only a prototype. I mean, nobody even knew it existed. So.
Jesus.
Yeah. God, yeah, that was kind of.
I bet that's exciting for someone then.
For the guy that's got it, yeah, he's pretty happy.
What's a common one then?
A common camera, I mean, like an everyday bread and butter job.
Yeah, so you get asked for a lot that you can.
Nikon
F3. F3.
Okay. Yeah, loads and loads and loads and loads of those.
Okay.
Nikon F3s, less so F2s and Fs. A lot of F6s. Previously mentioned. Mm. Yeah, people like those. FM2s, a lot of Nikon stuff. Mm. Also Leica M6. I mean, just endless requests for that. Contax T2s, T3s. Compact cameras I don't generally source now.
Yeah.
Due to lack of availability. So I only sell them on consignment if I can guarantee where they've come from.
Yeah, I noticed a few people been saying this about the
Yeah, because I don't, you know, they are quite expensive now.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to get a dud, so I'm pretty serious about making sure that people get the right one. I mean, there's a lot of everyday stuff. Lenses, lots of lenses.
Hmm.
But then there's a lot of stuff people ask me for which I can't source, like the Olympus OM and the Pentax MX and LX cameras.
Yeah.
I don't source them anymore because it's just not, well, A, it's not worth my time.
Nah.
Yeah. And B, the fees that I charge would, you know, almost double the cost of a camera like that.
Yeah.
And they're so ubiquitous that people can get them, you know, from places like eBay without too much concern.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're spending a bit more money, then you need that peace of mind. Then, yeah, sure, I will find you something. But when it's something that isn't terribly expensive, it's going to cost too much for me to do it for you.
Makes sense.
And I don't want you to spend that much money on a camera like that. It doesn't make any sense.
But that's good that you're honest as well.
I'm not going to take somebody's money to do something that I don't feel I should be doing.
Yeah.
You know? I don't want them to waste money. I want them to have money to spend on film. If I can, like, if somebody contacts me and says, "Hey, man, can I get a camera from you in Japan?" No, don't get it from me in Japan. The stores are here. I will tell you where to go. Use your tax-free status and get it yourself and save a bunch of money. Go and buy some film.
Yeah,
no, do us all a favor, you know.
No, that's nice.
I'm fortunate to be in the position to do that.
Yeah,
you know. So
no, that's cool. Are you seeing any trends then? Because obviously you've been doing it a long time. Are you seeing trends away from certain cameras and lenses, or
it's cyclical? I mean, everything's going up.
Yeah.
No matter what. Too bad. That's the way it is. But you see certain trends with, you know, like, I don't know if it's Ken Rockwell or somebody will blog about something like Nikon F5. And I'll wake up in the morning and there'll be like 10 people going, "Hey man, can you find me an F5? Wow. And I'll be messaging them saying like, "Has there been a video or something that I've missed?"
Yeah.
Hey, can you get me a Plowell Machina 6.7? Yeah, sure, but I can't get 10 of them. Come on, chill out.
Yeah.
There's, I think people become aware of certain cameras when people blog about them.
Yeah.
So, like, there was a popular piece by Ming Thane about the the Hasselblad V-series cameras.
Okay.
And then, you know, consequently, a lot of people messaged me about Hasselblad V-series. And then Emulsive had a piece about the complete Mamiya RZ system. And then all of a sudden I'm getting people saying, "Hey, can you get me an RZ?" So it as people become aware of the cameras, I get more requests.
Do you know what? This gives me an idea that I should do to wind people up. We should come up with a fake name and we'll do a blog article about it and see how many inquiries you get.
I really don't need that. I get so much mail, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
It's not OCD, that's not fair on people who have that condition, but I'm very fastidious. I want to make sure my mailbox is clear.
Yeah.
So I try to reply to everybody I possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, even if it takes me a couple of days, I make sure I get something back to them. But that leaves me in a position where I'm constantly checking my mail.
No, that's nice. So, yeah. Did you have to do much traveling then for this, or is it mainly Japan?
I used to. I used to travel at the drop of a hat at any opportunity. And certainly when I was building the business, yes, I did. Okay. I traveled a lot around Asia, traveled a lot to the United States and to Europe. And then a few years back, once I started, you know, I had a family.
Okay.
And I didn't really want to be away from them.
Yeah.
So I tried to limit it a bit more. So now maybe 2 or 3 times a year I will travel.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, in years past, I could be off somewhere every month.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember a period, it was like, went to New Zealand, just got back from New Zealand, went to New York, got back from New York, went to Finland. You know, it was nuts. It was nuts. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun initially traveling, but the novelty very quickly wears off.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Family changes everything.
Well, not just family changes everything. I get sick of airport lounges, I travel less now. I try to do stuff as much as possible online, but if necessary, I will still, you know, if there's something super rare or super crazy, yeah, I'll get on a plane.
No, that's good, because I remember reading an article, I think, where you'd been to America. To get, I think it was someone's Leica, but they had a lot of history with it and documentation.
Yeah, it was Fred Ton's Leica. That's from Chicago.
Yeah,
that was a long trip.
Was it?
That was a hard, hard trip. Yeah, I mean, it's a 14-hour flight from Japan to Chicago. So, yeah.
Was it worth it though?
It was, oh yeah, for sure, it was worth it, but yeah. It was tough. Yeah. But I was a lot more hungry back then.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't have the reputation, so I couldn't get people to come to me.
Yeah.
As I built up, I guess, the respect or the reputation, which, you know, people know that you're not a fly-by-night kind of operation or a flash in the pan. Mm. You know, they're more prepared to put their faith in what you do.
No, that's cool. So on that, in that instance, did you have a buyer lined up, or was it a case of you just had to get that?
Yeah, I had a buyer lined
right,
up.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew exactly who and where I wanted that to go, so.
So that's it's a totally different thing, though, isn't it, to just going somewhere to buy and hoping for the future?
Yeah, I mean, initially, that's why I was doing it back then that way, because I just couldn't afford the outlay.
Yeah.
I think now I'm in a better position. I would be able to do it myself and then find the buyer when I felt it was necessary, when it was right, the right time.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's a much more profitable arrangement.
Yeah.
And you can ensure that the item goes to the right person.
Yeah.
Because that's important. Yeah.
Well, I suppose you can take time to test stuff as well, can't you?
It's not so much with things like that. It's not so much a matter of testing. It's because it exists. It doesn't matter if it works or not.
Okay.
I mean, it was a museum piece, realistically.
Ah, right. Yeah, fair enough.
It's not going to be used.
Yeah.
Because it's a historical piece, and that's a different thing. But you want to make sure it goes to the right place.
Yeah, it's definitely important. So what's your choice of camera gear then?
This is where the flak comes in. I have a Leica MP6, which is like the prototype of the modern MP.
Okay.
Which was made for the Japanese market. They made about 400 units.
Wow.
And they're very expensive now, but, and this is the thing, I got it when it wasn't very expensive.
Ah.
I got it back years and years and years ago when nobody knew what it was.
Okay.
So I didn't pay a ton of money for it. Yeah. And now it's mine. And I'm not selling it because it's worth a lot of money. And people criticize me for that. Some people are like, how dare you use this thing? It's so valuable. And then there's others who are...
What?
Or, there's others who are like, oh, you know, you rich piece of crap. You just bought that for the image. Yeah, whatever. But no, it's mine. It's got a Leica bit on it. It's got a brass, aspherical, black paint, Summicron 35 lens on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's big. It's black paint. It's heavy. It's cumbersome. It's mine.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable shooting it.
Yeah.
Not everybody else is.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
That's my primary camera. I also have my dad's camera, which is a Minolta XG7. And I have a couple of other cameras which were gifted to me by mentors.
That's nice.
They generally don't get used. They do work, but they generally don't get used just because I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
But they're not to be sold because they were gifts.
Yeah.
But everything else, I had a lot of stuff. I had Nikon F3s and F4s and F5s. And I sold pretty much everything because I wasn't using it.
Mm.
And, you know, initially you want to amass lots of cool things. And then after a while you're like, wait, I don't need any of these cool things. And somebody else should use these cool things. So
yeah, I'm from that vein. I prefer people using stuff.
So off they go, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. Is the Leica a rangefinder then?
Yes. MP. So, it's rangefinder, fully manual. Mm. It can run without a battery. It has a light meter in it, but it can run without it. It's very simple. Very simple.
Yeah.
I can use, and my favorite camera to use is probably the Nikon, like FM3A or something, or an F3.
Mm.
But the Leica suits me because I'm not chasing stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for stuff to come to me.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I'm I don't know much about cameras, to be honest, because this is still on about my third year with film.
Right.
So, like, Leica's was just a name to me. I didn't know about the history till I think it was one of my podcast guests who told me Leica basically invented 35mm.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much. Oscar Bartnack. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I've learned so much from the podcasting side as well. But, like, the camera tech's irrelevant. I don't have the money for it. So I don't get gear envy in that sense. When I can afford it, I'll probably get it.
Sure.
So, you know, you stick to what you can afford.
Yeah, exactly. I'm fortunate to be in the position that I can take advantage of my job.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I was working as an apprentice for £5 an hour, I had a list in my back pocket of the cameras that I wanted to own.
Okay.
I had 10 cameras on that list.
Yeah.
All of them I considered unobtainium. Yeah. Hasselblads and all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I owned all of them.
That's cool.
Every single one of them. I've had every single one of them, but it took me 10 years to get them.
Yeah.
You know? So don't think that, don't get gear envy and just be bitter or something. Think, yeah, I want these. Have the desire to, you know, do whatever it takes to get them.
Yeah.
Because that's what I did. I sucked it up, sucked up my pride and got on with it. And it took a long time, but I got there, you know, and I felt it with each and every camera.
Yeah.
You know, I remembered it. So.
No, that's cool. I know recently I met a friend from LA and he showed me his modern day Leica. And I was, it let me just go through the option menus and stuff. And I was like, do you know what? I can sort of see why the Leicas is so different to every other brand. Because it was so simple. It felt like a film camera in the sense there's only like two dials, I think, on the top.
Yep.
And I was like, God, yeah. Because people have said to me, I think you would suit a Leica. And obviously I'm like, well, yeah, but I can't afford one and I don't want to get into that whole thing. But it's because I've tried like Sony mirrorless, Olympus, and I've tried DSLRs and I don't like the number of buttons. They're just wasted on me.
Sure. That's what it was for me. I got a bit of an overload. You know, I'd had my Nikon F3s and stuff and they were great. And then I got given a Nikon for Christmas years and years ago, like a D200.
That's what I have.
And I could not figure out all of the stuff on it, and it drove me. And my pictures were always oversaturated, just awful. And I really wasn't enjoying using it. So I went back to a Nikon F3 when I started working for that company. And then I just got more and more simple. I sort of shunned all of it. But no, there's still too many dials. I need to go less.
You know? You do, don't you?
God, I'll be on a pinhole camera by 2030. You know? Yeah.
I think I'm the same.
I just want it simple because I'm not shooting. You know, back then I was shooting a lot. Film was cheap. I was shooting a lot. But now, you know, I take my time. So I'm in no rush.
Best way, without a doubt, isn't it? So is there anything like that's exciting you at the minute then? Whether it's gear, accessories, film?
Yeah, camera dactyl's cool.
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. I like that guy. I like what they're doing.
Do you like his latest one?
Yeah, it's pretty rad.
Oh, wow.
I'd say bought that. Kickstart it, get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, get involved. I like what Kodak's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they're really trying, okay, I understand it's going to be expensive, but they're doing something.
Yeah.
They're making an effort to put out films on the market. I like, God, my brain froze. I like Photo Classic magazine.
Oh,
I mean, okay, yeah, I'm biased. I write for them, but I really like that our community has a magazine.
Yeah.
It's completely dedicated to analog film. And that Kodak and Freestyle and people like that are advertising in that magazine. That is brilliant.
Yes.
It shows that the community is maturing. I like all of the sort of innovative people who are trying to do new stuff.
Mm.
You know, I saw these film cases and they were like 100 and something euros for this machine film case, but it was amazing. You know, okay, it's really expensive and it's only for a niche buyer, yeah, but it was pretty cool. You know, I like what that there's companies like Analog Wonderland and Camera Film Photo and people like that who are making a viable business of online film sales.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant, and there will be more. Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is exciting. Mm. I think next year is going to be more so.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the market's changing. Photokina is kind of winding down, and you're seeing people do the photo. You've got this photo show in Birmingham
come
March, and there's going to be a whole analog section there, which is brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, so people should absolutely go to that.
Yeah,
you know, if you're in the UK, go. Oh, yeah, it's Birmingham. Yeah, fine, go.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And you might get to meet some of us.
So yeah. I mean, I wish I could go, but unfortunately, I'll actually be on holiday at that point. So,
okay,
I won't even be in Japan.
fair enough. Yeah, it's a good event. I went last year for the first time ever,
and
I only went to meet people. So I met Steve at Cosmo, Steve at Chroma, Sam at Solarcan, Paul at Analog Wonderland. I didn't get to talk to Hamish. I think we missed him. And
I don't know if you missed much there. Grumpy so and so.
Yeah, I love it,
Hamish.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's really cool. That's the thing. Everyone's really like. I mean, apparently
there was a really nice group.
Yeah, they are, and apparently I stood next to Andy Church from Kodak and didn't even know.
Yeah, well, I did exactly the same thing, don't worry, because I had no idea who he was. He had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
And I thought that Kodak didn't like me. And then all of a sudden, I get this random text from Andy saying, I can't believe I missed you. Please come back and see me at the Kodak stand. Yeah, and he's a really nice guy.
He is. Fabulous.
Really, really nice guy. And it's nice that... companies like Kodak and Ilford have got really great people there like that who are really engaged with the community.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm...
Because that can make a difference.
They do. I'm so grateful for my relationship with Kodak. My competition finished Christmas Eve with Kodak.
Yeah.
And there's been so many entries. Charlie from Kodak's asked if I can have an extension before we submit the results.
Wow.
Yeah, so wow. I was like, not bad. That's
good result. Fine.
Yeah, because I said at the end of the day, if it gets people looking at your film, that's great. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
You know, hopefully we can give some news for what's happening in the future as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm excited for that.
Good.
So thank you for that, Bernie. Obviously,
no problem. Thank you for having me.
Now it's time to put you through my random questions, mate. You get to move any country you want nearer Japan. Which one and why?
Any country near to Japan?
And any country at all in the world, you get to move it nearer. So you got this.
Oh, move it nearer to Japan.
Mm.
Oh, God. I'm just thinking about how many wars that would start.
Everyone thinks so different here.
Yeah, actually, I would really like to move the UK closer to Japan.
Okay.
They're very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar thinking, very similar process of manners. I think, you know, it's this island mentality.
Okay.
Go on, bugger off everybody sort of thing, you know, so it suits each other very well. I'm not sure if they would actually react well to being next to one another, but it would definitely be nice to be able to go and see my family in the UK without having to be on a plane for 14 hours. That would be fantastic.
No, that's cool. No, I like that. What will knock jokes become now we live in a digital world.
What will knock knock jokes become now we live in a digital world?
Because you won't be able, you don't knock at the doors anymore, do you? You use these bloody things, these mobile phones.
Hi, I'm an influencer.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, article. Probably. probably that.
Or
some just ghastly meme that you have no idea of what it means.
I have to get people to explain them to me. Godzilla, hero or villain?
Hero.
I'm with you on that.
Absolute hero.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm down with Godzilla, man.
Dante talked about the nine circles of hell. If Leica owners are the worst on the ninth layer, who represents fraud on the eighth?
Fraud?
Hmm.
Gear envy people.
I like it. Definitely.
Yeah. Because it's totally false, because you know full well that they would own that if they could have it.
So just remember, everybody, you're going to hell.
Gear envy people. Yeah. When you shit talk somebody else's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
yeah. Cool.
Instead of national service, you have to take part in the Olympics. So what event? And why?
Gymkhana. Of course. Equestrian.
Yeah. Ah.
Because I did it.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I was from a very early age until my teens, I did horse riding, including Gymkhana. So that would be the one where I'd be most comfortable.
Oh, that's different, isn't it? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. That for me, that would be that. Yeah, I'm not a good runner. I would like to do cycling, but the velodrome terrifies me.
Right.
But horses, around horses, I feel more than comfortable, more than happy. I feel peaceful. Yeah.
No, that's cool. Right. So thank you for that. The last thing I always ask everyone, who would you like to see on a future podcast? You know, I like to have a lot of variety. You obviously know a lot of different people. Who do you think might make an interesting show?
I think you've had most of the people. Have you had Emulsive?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. I think you've had most of the people I know. I'm pretty cheeky.
No, it doesn't have to be anyone famous.
Actually, you know what? I think Dan Tamarkin from Tamarkin Cameras in the US.
Okay.
He is a really cool guy. He's really, really geeky about cameras, and he gets so excited, and he's so awesome to talk to.
Okay.
He's a really cool dude, and he can talk forever. Vishal Soniji from Camera Film Photo, when you want to talk about film and developing, because he's really... He really knows his stuff, and he's really into it. Marwan from Photo Classic magazine.
Oh, Mar- yeah, yeah. He's been into it.
He's got a wealth of knowledge. He really knows his stuff. He's a super nice guy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys. Those are the behind-the-scenes guys. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that they're the important ones in my eyes.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much, Bellamy. It's been nice to finally get hold of you and... see you for who you really are, which is ace.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to hearing the podcast.
Smashing, mate. Thanks a lot for your time. Cheers, mate. Cheers. Bye.